Hi, today is November 14th, 2021. I'm Todd Agasawara, and this is Movies Podcast 382. I'm here with my good friend John Westfall, and we've got a very special guest, Craig Peacock. How you doing, Craig?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
So, if I sound funnier than usual, it's because I've got an echo in my left earbud, and I can't figure out why. We did a test recording. There's no echo in the test recording, so this should be okay. We'll let mostly John and Craig talk. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention before we got started, two things. I use Notability in my iPad a lot, and they changed to a fee model instead of a one-time purchase, but they backed off for people who bought it before, I think, November 1st or something, so yay. And if you use an iPhone and you're a Google One subscriber, your Google Photos has more photo edit options. Echo's really killing me. Including portrait light and HDR and stuff.
And so I had two additional things before we start talking with Craig. One of the things, you know, Todd, when you talk about them grandfathering in old people on Notability, I looked, and of course, when Notability first came out and everyone was talking about it, I downloaded it, played with it for a while. Haven't really used it in a while, but I at least am grandfathered in. So that's... If you don't think it's a benefit to be an early adopter, this is probably the 10th or 11th piece of software on iOS that I have downloaded at one point, played with, and then they've changed their model, and I've still been grandfathered into the old feature set. So I guess that's a good thing for early adopters. That's the plug-in. Play with it. You never know if you're going to want it later, especially for things that started charging and that sort of thing. And we talked a little bit about the upgrade that I wasn't expecting to make from my iPhone 12 Pro Max to my iPhone 13 Pro. I went out last night. Our town in Mississippi had its 50 nights of lights light up because when you're in the middle of nowhere, Christmas lights are nice to have for a long period of time. And I took a few shots. I didn't have exact side-by-sides of last year with the 12 Pro Max, but I did find that overall I did like the quality of the 13 Pro's photos better, which I would hope that's the way it would go with a new year of changes. The blacks were much better, less light pollution than I had on the 12 Pro Max last year. It was able to screen that out. You could really tell that in live photos because, of course, you're getting a little video snippet that has the light pollution still in it, but then the finished picture that Apple gives you takes most of those, makes the blacks nice and inky and takes out the pollution. And the video quality was very good. I think the video quality was a little better at night than it was last year in terms of capturing the feel of how it was to walk around versus just a video that's passable. So that's my takeaway from 13 Pro night shots versus 12 Pro Max night shots.
All right. Let's get into talking with our friend Craig, who I have not seen in 11 years, I think, in person at least. So technically, I still haven't seen you in person, but I see you on the screen. So Craig and I first met in the 1990s, which seems like forever ago, when we were both the only two Windows CEO enthusiasts in the world. And we met up in Comdex and been friends since. And we were among the first five Windows CE MVPs. And as you know, Craig and John, we've been talking about the 25th anniversary of CE. And one reason I thought, hey, we got to talk to Craig. So, Craig, you became a Microsoft employee after you were an enthusiast, a CE enthusiast.
Yeah, I worked at the mobile operator Orange in the UK afterwards. So I did a couple of stints in the UK. But it's really funny because when I... You mentioned like 1996 and 25th anniversary. To this day, I still remember the exact conversation and the exact order of events that got me into Windows CE and how I actually got the first device and where it was. So it was really funny. It was like, so I was working for a company in the UK called North Amber, and they're a computer distributor. And I was at Comdex and I was looking around and you know, you do the usual walk the halls, and then I saw like a wave of people congregating on the Microsoft stand, and there was some of the product team there, and there were people there talking. And then I went up to one of the people and I just said, where can I buy one of these? And it was a Cassiopeia and I went with the extra, the A11, and it was like Radio Shack sold out on the first day, but go around the corner of this block around here, they're getting another shipment in at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. So back in 1996, I felt really strange. An Englishman stood outside a shop I'd never heard of in a place I'd never been to, first time in the U.S., and then I waited, and there was a couple of people in. There was a couple of people there, and they're like, "Why are you waiting?" "I'm waiting for the store to open." And he said, "Yeah, a shipment came in. We haven't unloaded it yet." I said, "Where can I wait?" And then I literally stood by the counter till the guy went out and opened the boxes, got one, brought it in, and then I bought it. And I thought, this is going to be really interesting. This thing, there's something about this that's going to take off. And then that was me getting it. Then I went and played with it, and then I realized I could do a few cool things with it. And then it was interesting because when I got back to the UK, because I asked one of the people on the Microsoft stand, I said, "Hey, when are you going to be able to get these in the UK?" He said, "There's no way you're going to need these for at least 9 months. Not going to happen. Maybe longer." Definitely going to buy it then. Definitely makes sense to have one. And then it was interesting because it started off from there as. Because from the UK around that time, there was Scions, which I used to use. And then there was the HP 100LX running MS-DOS and the 200LX. Yep. Remember, the 200LX may have just come out then. And that was running DOS, but it didn't have any connectivity to it. It was really hard to get those online back in the day. And so it was great at doing what it did and spreadsheets and bringing up files and making a few notes and stuff. But it wasn't quite the same. And then when I got it, I was like, there's lots of cool things we can do with this. But number one thing was, how do I get it online? Back in the day, how do I hook this up to a dial-up modem? Can I get a dial-up modem? I think, is it socket communications? Sold a little card and you could plug the modem in, and there were different other hardware IHVs. And it was like, this thing's great. I can get onto, I used CompuServe in the UK, and then you could get your POP3 email on it. And this thing was great. And it was like the first device I remember being able to say, I could download my emails, which was kind of a rare thing anyway, back in 1996, probably, right? I could browse the web, and then I could actually take files with me or take user guides and manuals with me. And I remember one of the main things I used it for was to plug it in, get my mails, download a bunch of user guides and manuals so I could do my job. And if I went anywhere, I could bring the manual up. And this was like, this was very convenient. It saved me lots of time and effort. And that was kind of how it all started for me. But then I was like, after using this thing for a couple of months, I was asked to attend a meeting where Casio UK were coming to visit the company I was working for. And the person in the company who was organizing the meeting said, "Can you come along to the meeting?" I came along to the meeting and I opened my Cassiopeia. And they were like, "Where did you get that? We came here to tell you all about this new thing. And you have one in your hand. How did you do this?" They're like, "We haven't got more than three in the country, and you're sitting there across the table with one." And it was just really funny because it was like, well, I was in Vegas and I happened to be at the right place where people were having a side conversation on a stand, and I waited patiently for them to finish, and they told me where to buy it, and I've been using it for about a month or two, and it's awesome. I didn't say awesome. I said, I think it's great is what I said. And it was kind of funny because the journey started from there. And in terms of then it was a quest for knowledge. What can you do with it? And then I realized, well, it's kind of really hard to get this thing to do dial-up modem and type in your AT commands and get it to actually, like, if in the UK, if you didn't do an ATS0 and reset it, or ATZ first, you couldn't actually get online. And if you didn't set the baud rate right, you couldn't get online. And people that are new might not remember baud rates and dial-up modems, but, you know, we kind of, it was the world we lived in, right? And once you could get online, and you could do these cool things, and then you could take stuff with you, and then you could access it when you're on the go. What a crazy concept, right? You could just do these wonderful, productive things with these small mobile devices, but there was no YouTube videos back then for people to figure out how to do it. There were no user manuals really either. And there was a bunch of people that were going, let's try and help, but, like, you know, all these lovely people that bought these great devices thinking they're cool, and then going, now how do I use it to its full potential, or how do I even do some cool stuff with it? And that was kind of how it all started for me. And then I kind of just got into the bug and bit the bug and tried a few different models through the years and spent, like we do, we spend far too much money on gadgets for far too long. But then it was like, but this thing's really productive. This thing helps me be more productive, and this thing gets me online. And it's kind of strange to think of that. That was 25 years ago. So like, you know, when you tell people you've been doing mobile email for 25 years, it was like many of them have only known mobile email since they, you know, they don't know anything different. They don't remember the older days.
Yeah, yeah. Very true.
Yeah, very the idea true. Of downloading your email and then doing everything with it offline and then, you know, connecting and pushing all of your changes, it just, it really is a foreign concept to talk to people today. And I think it was in many ways a healthier way of doing email in that you could actually, you didn't have new things pouring in while you were trying to work with the old things. But it is definitely a strange thought for modern audiences.
And one of the things that, on that note, that I kept with me, and a manager of mine gave me the tip and told me, you know, reminded me about it quite a few years ago. And I have an outbound delay send on my Outlook so that every email I send stays in the outbox for a minute or two, just in case I make a typo or I forget something. And so I'm not in such an urgent hurry to like hit control enter and just send it. And, you know, I think it came from that. Oh, yeah. That great advice from the manager. But it was like, oh, yeah, I remember the days when we used to do that. You could do that all the time because that was the only way you could do it.
Yeah, telling people about delay send is a feature that, you know, I think about in the old days, you could just schedule your modem to connect up at a certain time or do something like that. But I talk to people all the time about productivity, and they say, well, I don't want to appear like I'm always available. So if I'm responding to emails on a Saturday, I don't want people to think I'm available on Saturday. So I say, well, just hit a delay send until Monday morning and have them go out then. And it's, well, you can do that. Like, yeah, email doesn't have to be as soon as you hit send, it goes somewhere. It can stick around for a while.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm, you know, over the years, I think as me and Todd saw, you know, on the journey, there's been so many great Windows CE devices and so many great devices that were innovative at the time. If you exclude battery life, right? Because we all know battery life has gone much better because the technology has gotten better. But other than the battery life situation, you know, although it was kind of neat that you could carry around a couple of spare AA's and kind of get your True. Mobile devices working again back in the mid-90s. But do you two have like a favorite? I don't know. It's hard to pick one, right? It's like, what's your favorite this or that? But I don't know. I have like a top three. But I don't know, what devices did you guys find as some of your more favorite ones for different memories or different reasons?
Well, you know, your first is always special, right? And mine was the HP 20LX. But a few years later, I think my favorite was the HP Jornada 720 handheld PC. That was awesome. Color screen, pretty decent-sized keyboard. It was so small, but awesome.
Yeah, for me, I got into it a little later in the game. You know, my first Windows CE device was the Pocket PC. It was the Pocket PC Phone Edition or the HTC Wallaby. And so I did not really know too much about the previous generations other than having played with them here and there. So I'd say that my favorite devices were probably the HTC Universal from 2005, the iMate Jazz Jar that still has a great screen on it. The HTC Titan 2, which was kind of the version of the flip, you know, pivoting screen that started around 2005, and then that came out in 2008 or 9. Mine are later devices, but the earlier devices did have that level of you're working with a computer in a sense, whereas the later devices, as soon as we took a pivot into Pocket PC, it became a PDA. From a
yeah.
computer, in my opinion.
How about you, Craig?
Like, remind me to come back to talk about the HTC Universal, but I got a great story to tell you about that. But so mine, okay. I can't pick one. I like the Cassiopeia for all the reasons we just discussed was the first, but I had three favorites throughout the years. So I had the HP Jornada 680, which was because it was a different color. It wasn't the traditional dark gray. It was, you know, half VGA, pretty fast. I think, I can't remember what speed the modem was. I got a feeling that the modem was like 57K as opposed to, or maybe in 33.6, I don't remember, but the modem was like, it got me online quicker than the previous generation, right? So I kind of, so that one I remember really fondly, and I think it had the full-size PCMCIA slot, so that was kind of useful. So I could, in the UK, I could put a Nokia data card modem in and do GSM data on it. So that one, fond memories, like mainstay device for quite a long time. I also really liked, I was probably in a minority, but I really liked the Sharp mobile on tripod, the Sharp tripod one with the folding arms and the screen that could fold flat back on like a 2-in-1 does these days. But the Sharp, I forget the model number, but it was the Sharp sort of laptop style, but with the two arms on the side and you could rotate the screen.
I did have a Clio, which sounds similar.
Yeah, maybe that was the name for it. Maybe a different marketing name, different places. But yeah, so that was kind of fun for reasons that it looked different and it looked like something no one had ever seen before. And then the last one.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go. No, go carry on.
I was just going to say, so in the U.S. at least, it sounds like the Vadim Clio. And I actually bought two at the conference you and I were at in 2000. I think it was Professional Developers Conference in Denver. And they're actually selling them on the floor. And I bought two of them because a friend of mine wanted one.
Yeah, that must have been like, I don't remember when that was. That was like 2012 or 2011. I don't know when that was, but it was, maybe it was a bit earlier than that. But it was, these things were, that was great for those reasons. And then, and so those would be my top three. But on the, you mentioned the HTC Universal.
Mm-hmm.
In my professional capacity working for Microsoft, I had the experience of witnessing the world's first video call on the HTC Universal. I was invited and for a meeting in Germany, T-Mobile in Bonn. We had the firmware update arrive overnight from HTC engineers, and I was in the Faraday cage in the lab with two other people making the video call on their test 5G network when they were testing the software. And I was giddy excited about it for years. I thought it was great. And it was
I was just going to say, that was the one thing that was always frustrating in the United States is that we didn't have, for the HTC Universal, all the correct things to be able to have all the bells and whistles. You know, you would see these things from, Europe and the Middle East where they could utilize some of the full potential on these things. And because it never got a release in the United States, I don't think it ever did get an official release in the United States. We can do all that cool stuff here.
Yeah. All we had was GPRS.
Yeah. So that was... Those were good days. I mean, there were so many good devices. I mean, and I think that they all shared a theme, right? They all shared a theme of, it didn't really matter what the theme was, but every one of them did something unique, or each generation did something unique and different that made people get closer to what we now, you know, ubiquitous mobile data that everybody has, right? And in most places in the world anyway, but you know, it's, and I think those devices all made it easier. Sure, there were some frustrations with them. Sure, some things didn't work as good, like battery life or whatever. But when you realize that, you know, you could do these new things, you could do mobile data easier, you could do them in a smaller form factor. You had a CE battery life on, like, I don't know, what the Jornada 820 or something, like, had a dozen hours of battery life, or 15 hours of battery life, right? And then you could get these devices, and if you think to people today, so yeah, you get a laptop with 10 hours battery life, you go, that's great. And you go, yeah, and I had this device that ran on a couple of rechargeable batteries. It was a wonky color that didn't have a very good screen, especially if you tried to use it outdoors, but it also had like 10 hours of battery life. And so it's kind of fun days back then with the innovation. And I know this was like life before Easter eggs as well, so I kind of always found it funny, like, you know, I like the fact that I was able to figure out some of these Easter eggs just because we were CE MVPs, I guess. But, you know, like in solitaire, if you held down a certain key combination on palm-sized PC, you get a perfect hand and you could watch the cards fall off the deck.
I remember
that. If you use the keyboard in a certain combination, it would deliver a perfect hand. It was like the first ever built-in benchmark. You could see the graphics performance as the cards coming off. And visually, you could almost time it, right? You could, like, put two machines next to each other and see which one did it the quickest. And it was so easy. There was, like, no software required. It was because someone built it in, or what were the other ones? There were some crazy ones, right? I can't remember what word it was, but I think on some of the generations, Jason Dunn had showed me, I was like, I think on some of them, it was like if you type like Godzilla or something in Word, it would roar at you. Or there were, if you went to a particular cell in Excel and typed something in, it would do something funky and show people's names. And, you know, it's good that people don't build in all these Easter eggs anymore for security reasons. But it is kind of, it was kind of a fun time when they did a few little wacky things like that.
Yeah, I think that was just the beginning of the. In that era, you could do so many new things and see what stuck, you know, kind of throw it at the wall, see if it sticks. And the Easter eggs were part of that. The form factor changes. That's why it was so much fun to have, you know, 6 or 7 daily driver devices that you would swap between. You know, let me see how a week with this is or a week with that. You know, phones are pretty boring comparatively today versus when we had those eras.
It's funny you mention that because, you know, we have a couple of models, iPhones, and there's a, you know, a bunch of Android phones. But I remember when Craig was working on the CE team, he mentioned to us that he had a spreadsheet with, what, hundreds of Windows mobile device models, something crazy like that?
Yeah, there was loads. I mean, I had, when in the phone days as well, I was lucky enough, there were thousands of different ones because, and it's so interesting because different markets appealed to different devices, to different colors, to different screen sizes, to different, you know, logistical challenges, right? You know, if one model took off really well here, you'd only sell it there because you couldn't get a stock or they couldn't make them quick enough. And I think it was, and still is, I think, a testament to the innovation and how people look at innovation differently around the world. You know, you could have a device that I remember being in a meeting where someone was talking about default ringtones and how if somebody in one particular country tried to set a default ringtone of a device for a market in another country based on what they thought that country would like. You know, I think it was Brazil they were talking about at the time, and it was like they were saying, no, don't put like a traditional Brazilian samba ringtone on a device that you want to sell to someone who's a teenager or in their early 20s. They want to listen to American pop music. And it was like just that one sentence of a user's perception when they pick up the device and one of the first things they do, I think still today, I would imagine it would poll really highly globally today, is they take a new phone out, they go, what's the camera like? And they go, what ringtones are on this thing? How do I personalize it so it doesn't sound like everybody else's? You know, back in the day, of course, download an MP3 file and that would be our ringtone and that would be kind of neat, right?
Yep.
But it was like, I think those were a WAV file way back when in CE originally. And it was like, but I think that sort of customization, personalization, I think is still key. I think you want a great first experience regardless of what it is, knowing that lots of people don't change it. But I think a lot of people do play around with it and still do see what it can do or how it can be different and invest some time in seeing how they'd like to customize these things. And I don't think those aspects of those early devices, I think that still holds true today, and I think it still will for a long time.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, I set my phones to vibrate these days and I let it ring my watch or my, you know, Fitbit or whatever.
That's fair. Yeah. So on the
My favorite ringtones today are the ringtones that you think are one thing and then another. So the remixes of the standard, you know, iPhone ring and things like that morph into another song. But yeah, half the time I don't hear most of my ringtone because I'm either on silent or I pick up quick enough that, you know, you get 2 seconds in and you're going from there.
Yeah, I use a Sony Xperia Android phone, so I'm still in the Android camp. I've really enjoyed some of Sony. I know they haven't always had the best reviews and over the years, and they kind of went good and then went bad. But I really liked, for the longest time, I used their little compact ones, the Xperia compact versions, just because I liked the smaller form factor when I was doing certain things. But the last couple of years, I've been using an Xperia Pro, and so that's been my go-to phone for a long time. A year and a half, long time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
A year is a long time these days, right? And here we are talking about 25 years ago, but yeah, I really like it. I've had I've always, as Todd can attest to, I've always been terrible at taking photos, and he's been awesome at it. And you know, I've enjoyed taking some of the videos with it, and the HDR videos and the 4K videos with it, and lots of storage space on the phone without having to worry about the hassle of it, even though everything goes up to the cloud. And you know, I found quite a few times in for job wise, not necessarily using all of the professional video photography features of it, but I found so many times in so many places I've been in need of a VGA monitor, or I've been in need of a 4K monitor. Now I can use my phone as my 4K monitor, as an extra monitor if I need to plug in somewhere, if I'm out and about, or if I'm needing to plug in a second screen to do stuff without taking up lots of desk space. I can plug in my phone, which is odd. It still is odd. Yeah. Still is really weird. But the number of times I've been able to, just if I'm setting something up or I'm doing something in limited space and I just want to plug in a monitor, and now don't have to worry about finding one or the right cable. I just plug in my phone, which usually gets a few looks when you do it. Like, what is that? What are you doing? This is my monitor. And then you go, oh, I'm getting old. I can't see it very well when it's on the tiny tablet. But it solves the problem.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't go with the dual, so you can have two screens when you plug it in.
I had one of those and used it. My son grabbed it from me, and he took it for the longest time. That was great. For the number of times, you know, we live in a world, like, I love Windows Snap on Windows 11, so I don't use the dual screen. I don't necessarily need to use dual monitors as much. But I found that when I went from dual monitors to dual screen phone, the number of times I was out and about, if I was on a call or I was on a meeting and someone said, can you look up this, can you look up that, I know you can do split screen and I know you can do these things, but just having the dual monitor, so I literally could be on a call or video call or whatever on one, and being able to bring up calendar on the other, or being able to search something on the other, or even just presenting and having different speaker notes or something on one, but being able to drive it all from my phone. And I think it's sort of reminiscent of those old days of, if I think of it as a device that makes me more efficient or more productive without having to think about a different way of being more productive, then it made total sense, and it was great. And I still have it around and grab it and use it for some things if I know I'm going to be in an environment or out and about traveling where I'm going to need to do some of those things, but I don't want to take a laptop with me, then, you know, then it works totally great, and it just does all those things, you know. Then my Sony, you know, just takes better videos and takes better pictures.
Which is important.
Which is good. Which is great.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
You know, I was able recently, my daughter was playing in, you know, a sports game. I was able to sit in stands, take 4K video, zoomed in. And then someone said, if we have any stills, we're really looking for some stills. I thought, oh, I shot video. I didn't bother taking any stills that day.
Yeah.
But because it was the 4K video, I mean, I just opened it up in like Adobe Premiere or something, and I was able to just screen snip 10, 15 different still images because the quality was so good. And then I was able to send them to one of the teachers and some of the other parents of decent stills without even thinking about, did I capture the moment, because I was enjoying watching the game and I just happened to have a video.
Right.
And it was, so to me, it was, you know, that two balance, right? You get like the Duo and CE days and all those days where you were able to do more, or you were able to do things that were familiar and you were able to do them easily, to the going online with the mobile devices through the 90s and the 2000s using cellular or dial-up back in the day. And then you kind of get to today's technology where everyone's used to doing one thing on one device and kind of learning how to do it. And then you're like, is it easy to do? Sometimes, yeah. Battery life, yeah. Sometimes easy, sometimes not. But, you know, kind of improvise and learn along the way, right? There's still plenty of learning to be done in the world, right?
Yeah.
True.
But I think the big deal back then was everything was so new and different. It was kind of exciting. At least it was, you know, to me as a geek.
Yeah. Same here. It was totally, it was like that Casio meeting experience, right?
Oh, wow.
You walk in and you're able to do something and you show people. And then when I went to sites, the fact that I could bring up the manuals, and I had like 50 manuals or something on my phone or on my mobile device as it was then, right? I didn't have to worry about if I was in a cellar somewhere with no coverage. I was able to just, you know, get access to this thing and do it and you know, figure things out. And I think, and it was exciting because there was always something new. Every 6 months there was something new. You know, like in the UK, after that Casio-Pierre experience with CE 1.0, we were trying to launch work on an HP. The HP, I think it was the 300LX or 320LX. You know, and this thing was great. It was similar form factor to 200LX. It was like half VGA.
Yep.
And it was, you know, it was great, right? And then we were like, where's the UK pound sign? Oh, we don't support that. And we're like, you have to wait for CE 1.01 or 1.02. I can't remember, right? Where they added like internationalization support for like Japan as well as, you know, UK. And so UK got the pound key. So when we had our UK currency symbol on it, it was like, this is great. It was funny. It was like, the reason no one could launch 1.0 in the UK was it didn't support the UK currency symbol. So they had to wait for 1.01. And then HP got there first. And, you know, then that was the one that was the bigger seller in the UK, as well as the fact that they were already big with the LX series. And, you know, it was just kind of funny. It was like, great. And it was like, and then that innovation continued with like palm size PC and other CE, like whether it was eBooks back in the day, readers, or Microsoft Reader with DRM protection with like Barnes and Noble books in the US, and I forget who it was in the UK, right? It was like, but you could take books and reprint them, or you could take user guides and reprint them as DRM and get them on the device. And then it was like, I don't remember who else had books and content, but it was like technically solving a problem for people, and that was good. And it was meant you could do fun things with it. And then
that was the first commercial legitimate ebook solution I had. In fact, I think when Microsoft was promoting it with Barnes and Noble, they released like 5 or 6 free Star Trek novels for the e-reader. And I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, I think, it was, you know, it may have not been the one that made the solution mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of those examples, you know, it was one of those examples of showing that you could solve that problem, or you could solve that technical problem on a different, new, unique form factor. And it may not be, you know, we know it wasn't the most successful over time and all the rest of it. But back in the day, I mean, I imagine many, if you think back through, I mean, like, it's hard to say that Reversi on CE 1.0 was mobile gaming, right? But, you know, like, or Solitaire on when that came on, like, but, you know, you think of these things and you go, some really, really dedicated and clever people help figure some of these things out. And you see it across all ecosystems, right? You see new, unique things, and it doesn't matter where you look, which mobile form factor platform. You go back to those days, and like John, like you said earlier, right? People are throwing ideas out there to see which one sticks, I think is a really good way to put it. Because it was like, they knew that this wasn't possible before, and they knew they could come up with a solution. Whether the solution was mainstream, you know, jury was out. But at the time, could they demo it? Could they show that it did it? Could they get people thinking about, you could do more with this device, you could do more with that than you thought before, or more than the previous one? And I think that era, I mean, I wonder how many different things we could throw out between like everyone that was involved as saying, you know, what was a list of firsts between like 96 and maybe 2003 2004, you know, that came about because people could do some cool stuff on some of these early Windows CE devices. I know Scion did some really cool stuff with mobile calendar and mobile diary as a predator to that in the UK, and HP running, you know, MS-DOS on a mobile device. I mean, we had a device in the UK that didn't run CE, but it was the 700LX with like a plastic sleeve on it, and you could slide your Nokia cell phone in and get GSM data. And the thing was like very thick, very big, but it did it, and it solved the problem. And, you know, in the UK, we had Orange Video Phone back in like 2002, mm-hmm. which like had CE embedded before thing, but you could do video calls on GSM dial-up network by doing some clever stuff of joining two basically channels together to get double the bandwidth. And you got to see and do some of these other things, and then you kind of think back now and you go, we knew that was kind of fun and special and new, but didn't really, you don't really think back and go, that paved the way for 20 years of innovation. And as hardware got better, that those solutions to things were kind of clunky and kind of made for demo rather than being used every day. And then, you know, 10 years later, 20 years later, millions and millions of people, probably billions of people around the world do something similar, but do it every day.
Yeah. The features that we're playing with back then was amazing in that context.
Well, and we had features and use abilities that would take 10 years to go to other platforms. You know, I'm thinking about in 2005, I could, through Bluetooth dial-up networking on my Windows CE devices, I could connect to the device that had a GPRS connection and basically share the internet connection through that. It would take another decade for that to become common with the hotspot on Android and iOS, and it would take even longer for you to not have to pull out the host device and enable it on there. The idea that you could today on your device trigger your personal hotspot from across the room and connect through, you know, that wasn't until reliably going on until 2 or 3 years ago with iOS. So crazy to think about things we lost for a while. And there's still some features that I don't have on iOS that I could do easily on Windows CE and Pocket PC.
Yep, that's for sure. And like we said, it is like, you know, it's kind of funny that you kind of forget about designing for offline use, right? You kind of forget for, you know, everyone's got everything online. Everyone's got as much bandwidth as they need whenever they need. No, not really. No. But back in the day, I mean, some of the form factors as well. I mean, some of them look like a laptop, but they just ran CE.
Right.
The palm-sized ones, you know, shove them in your pocket. The accessory business, I mean, companies like, you know, Socket. Socket's the one that I remember most because they did the Ethernet cables and they did a barcode scanner reader and they did some interesting things. And then there was ones that did, like say, the cellular, Nokia did Nokia data card with GSM dial-up. And Ericsson did a GPRS one for the UK and Europe. So you could take any of these devices that had the full slice slot back then and you could be online with GPRS. And, you kind of think through to all of these, you know, little weird innovations and different things that people did to make it easier. And I mean, I remember Chris, I think, you know, and Jason were showing me, like, they were like, no, we couldn't buy like a flat Ethernet cable, or you couldn't buy a roll-up Ethernet cable that fit into a tiny little size of a little old matchbox or something, right? Or half the size of a PCMCIA card. You could get dial-up cables, but you couldn't get roll-up Ethernet cables in the UK. This was like, oh no, you can get them here. Oh, okay, I want one of those. That's going to save me a lot of space in my bag with all the cables. And it's like, you know, it's kind of funny that the software spurned so much innovation, like John, like to your point. And then the hardware, the gadgets, the accessories, the different things that people all did and made as a result of these things was just great.
Yeah. And I should note, you know, although from Craig's history and what we consider an accent, he's actually in the West Coast right now. So I think you've been there quite a while.
Yeah, I've been here since 2003. The end of 2003. And it's funny because just after I was here for just a year, when I went back home I originated from Bristol in the southwest of England. And just after being here for just a year, I went back home and like person in a local store that was like half a mile from my house where I grew up was like, "You're not from around here, are you?" It's like, huh? And then I think back, like in the UK, people, you grow up and you can recognize accents from less than 10 miles away to notice the difference in someone's accent. And it's like one of the things about the US is like you ask people here where you say, "Where are you from?"
Yeah.
They tend to say where they live. Whereas in the UK, you ask anyone where they're from, they always recount like where they were born. And it was like, it's just an interesting thing that someone who was that close, you know, in my hometown could tell that my accent had changed after a year. But, you know, but I still have it. It just may be, I do the translations of words automatically now, you know, and I still get teased a little bit when I use certain words when I'm on calls with family back home. My nephew will say, like, you know, Uncle Craig talks funny, got a funny accent and stuff like that. So that's always good. But it's been fun. I mean, there's so many things that are just different or easier here. Like, you know, like, and then there's some things that are good, you know, everywhere. You, when you move from one town to another, right? You move home when you think there are some things that are good about your old town. There's some good some things about your new town. There's some easier access to technology in your new town. There's easier access to technology in the old, you know, like when I moved to the US, I was, you know, they haven't got a store here anymore near where I live, but there's a store called Fry's Electronics.
Oh yeah.
I'd never been to a computer store that was the size of about three football fields, right? It felt like it. It might have been not quite that big, but it felt like it was. And it was like, how can they possibly fill this place? And why can they sell all these things? This is like fantastic. Just like, it's like going to the biggest toy shop ever when you're a kid, but when you're slightly older.
I remember during the Amfihi summits, our friends from the UK and Europe would always make a beeline to Fry's or Best Buy. That was like part of their field trip while they're in the Seattle area.
Yep, definitely. It had to be done.
Hey, I think we're coming up to the top of the hour.
Usually to the detriments of our wallets.
Yeah.
And Craig has a heart out. So I just wanted to ask if there's anything else you wanted, any memories of with CE, Windows Mobile, Windows Phone even.
I remember from the Windows CE and just the fun times we had when we used to get together as CE MVPs.
Yep.
And how it was awesome to get hosted, or we didn't get hosted, just having the fun chats around dinners and, you know, giving people a hard time and looking them square in the face sometimes and saying things like, you telling me this is easy. Why do I have to write 35 steps for this to work? What's your definition of easy if 35 steps? Well, at least you can do it. It used to be you couldn't even do it. And we're like, no, that, you know, and then Jason or Chris will be like, that bar is too low. You need to aim higher. Your bar has to be higher. And I never heard this phrase, the bar needs to be higher, before. This was like, I had no idea what he's saying. But okay, I think let me go with it and see what he responds. Oh, yeah, now I get it. And it was like, make things better. Make things easier. It's cool doing all the innovation, but if you don't want to lose people, you got to make this easier. If you don't make it easier, people are just going to get frustrated. And yeah. It was like, and then, you know, next version would come along and it'd be a little bit easier. And then some things would be there. And then it would, like, I remember one occasion we were invited to a bug bash. And they go, you know, it'd be great if you guys can find 5 or 10 things, you know, and then give it to the product team because they're still haven't finalized everything. They're still working on it. And they're in midst of planning for the next version. And they said, I can't remember if it was Jason or Chris or Frank, one of them, you know, said, how long are you giving? He said, well, what do you reckon? A couple of hours? Well, should we cap the number of bugs at? Because the host was going to a meeting, and right, we had a big whiteboard, like the size of a conference room wall, right? So just write them up on the board as they come up. And I think we filled like the equivalent of 3 whiteboards, and it must have been 50 or 75 different items, right? And then they came back in a room, and it's like, what are all these? These questions? No. These are the bugs we found in the bug bash. But you only gave us 2 hours, and we don't have any more whiteboard. Do you have another conference room we can use, or what should we do? And it was like, wait there. I'm just going to go get someone and show them this. And then a couple of people come in, and it was like, but it was those sorts of things. And it was like, I don't remember the exact phrase, but it was along the lines of, these guys really passionate about this Windows CE. They're really passionate about helping people. They really wanted to show you that, thank you for like hosting us and giving us some time. But look, they just sat here for 2 hours. And they just give you 50 bugs you can go work on, some which are really bad, some which are really important for you to fix. And, you know, they're just doing this because they care so much about helping these thousands and thousands of people around the world that really want to make this mobile and Windows CE and mobile stuff better and easier. And they're kind of giving you their time. And they've just given you a really big, long list that's going to make you sigh. Know that you're not going to get to all of them, but here's your list. And it was like, those sorts of meetings, or those just catching up, and those just like this, is just so much fun. Just chatting, and after all these times, because I've been terrible at keeping in touch, and it's great that you reached out. And like 25 years, it's gone by in a blink of an eye. You know, like next week, 25 years. I mean, Comdex is a thing of the past. I know kind of CES kind of replaced it, right? Number of things that have come and gone over the years. And, you know, to just think back at all these awesome memories of just how we were pioneers of helping people. I don't necessarily even think of the CE aspect of it anymore. I think the number of us that we got into it because we enjoyed the tech, we enjoyed what it was and the fact that you could do new stuff. But deeply rooted in all of this, I think all of the MVPs to this day and all of the people that do YouTube videos and do help videos and everything, there's just an innate desire to help people. And we were lucky enough to do it when the technology was changing quickly, was really cool, was really fun. And you could do stuff for the first time ever with some of these devices. And we were there, like, being able to do that. And I think that's what made it even more special around, you know, what it could do. And just to be a part of it was great. You know, and I think that there's just so many, you know, you could just talk for hours and hours and hours about all the cool features and all the cool stuff. And I think that it's just so much fun to think back about it and think how those decisions and those early days shaped the way that everybody on the, you know, uses tech these days.
It does. You know, and I know you only have a couple of minutes left, so I just wanted to share a couple of thoughts that from my memory is that I remember we kept wanting the internet, the mobile Internet Explorer browser to be good versus, you know, kind of a toy browser. And, you know, eventually it did become good. Or the calendar or synchronization with anything. It was just a lot of stuff like that I don't know if we had any influence. I'd like to think we did. I think we did change them from dumping the 30-day monthly calendar, which we were outraged by. But, yeah, there was a lot of little things that people, except us, will never know, but that's fine.
Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, I think it's, like I say, I could... You know, I could chat for ages about CE. It was so much fun. You know, got so many cool things out of it. We're able to do so many interesting things about it. And it's funny because I still have, you know, in a box in the garage somewhere, probably still have a dozen different devices that are from that era. I remember selling my original Casapia, which is a shame, but I have a lot of the other ones. And it's kind of like, it's funny because you kind of feel like sometimes you just want to power them back up, shove a couple of new batteries in them and show you the kids, but then they'd say, "Dad, you're old.
Yeah.
Why is that so big? Why is it so heavy?
Why is it so slow?"
By
today's standards.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so much fun chatting to you both. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you, Craig.
I haven't been in communication for so long, but thanks for reaching out. And if you need to do an encore of CE related, I'll scratch my memory banks and kind of wake up a few brain cells of things that I thought I'd forgotten and enjoy the conversation again.
And in fact, you know, even before the anniversary, this year, 2021, John and I started reaching out to old friends that we literally have not spoken to in years. So, you know, people, Elio, Arnie, you know, people we email with and converse with on Facebook and so forth, but we really haven't spoken to. So it's been a real interesting year reaching back out to old friends like yourself, Craig. So thanks for making the time, and hope you and the kids enjoy the movie.
Yeah, thanks. And thanks so much. And like I say, feel free to reach out, and I'll try and do a better job of staying in touch.
No, this is great. Yeah, let's just not make it every 11 years.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks.
All right, folks. This has been MobileViews 382. Craig Peacock, our special guest, John Westfall, Todd Ogasawara, and we'll talk to you next time.